Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome once more to the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. Recording this on Friday, October the 12th, with an impressive sounding voice and an impressive lineup of guests as well. In case David and Rafe again, but shh, don't tell them that. David, welcome. How impressive are you feeling today?
I am feeling fantastically impressive, as well everyone should be able to tell.
Excellent. Rafe, are you just as impressive?
No, not really. I'm feeling pretty much like my normal self.
Oh, but you are impressive. You know more arcane things than most of Nokia has forgotten.
I think that's a slight exaggeration, but I'll do my best to deliver interesting insights, because that's the name of the podcast.
Interesting insights. There we go. And count to three, and the domain name's gone by somebody else. There we go. Right. Yes, we're in October. Strangely enough, we've always said this is the quiet period, but there's more leaks coming up. It's almost as if everybody's building up momentum without actually breaching the start line that Microsoft have imposed, which is leading to some very interesting topics. But let's just pull back a little bit from that first. Calm yourselves down. Let's have a look at some interesting bits of software. Rafe, I'm going to come to you first of all with the interesting decision and chat around Rovio. Rovio, of course, had about 40 or 50 games released, and then they released Angry Birds a couple of years ago, and boom, they were suddenly everywhere. We've got another couple coming up from Rovio as well, and it's interesting to see where they place into the Windows Phone world.
It is indeed. I mean, the games you're speaking to here, I assume, are Bad Piggies and Angry Birds Star Wars, although we can also go back to Angry Birds Space, all of which have sort of been announced. Bad Piggies and Angry Birds Space have, of course, already come out, and they've been promised for Windows Phone, but, you know, with an undefined later release period. And we've just had this week the announcement for Angry Birds Star Wars. I think really interesting type of two kind of mega brands there. I think some very canny decision-making going on there. They do seem to match up quite well. And seeing Luke, Chewbacca and everybody else recreated as Angry Birds character, I think is going to be a lot of fun. Now, the sort of download day for that is November the 8th. However, we're not got full confirmation that it's going to be available for Windows Phone then. But my suspicion is it might well be the case. I mean, up until now, they've been saying, yes, it will be available later and not talking in any detail about it. And I think part of that is really about the story around Windows Phone games. And, you know, for those that don't know, you know, basically it's been very hard to port games onto Windows Phone because it doesn't have access to the same gaming engines. It doesn't have native C++ code access in Windows Phone 7. And so that's made it difficult to port across game engines or indeed any kind of cross-platform libraries or reuse of code. And so essentially most game developers have had to recreate their games from scratch. They've maybe been able to reuse some of the graphics and the other creative bits, but, you know, recreating stuff in XNA, the kind of the gaming language, if you like, of Windows Phone 7, I think has probably held back Windows Phone as a gaming platform. Now, in Windows Phone 8, Microsoft are supporting native C++ development, and they've also got a number of game engines. These are kind of the things that developers use to, you know, have a quick start on games. You know, it will be around something like physics or producing certain types of graphics, or indeed, you know, an entire system for producing a game. And there's quite a few of these are supporting Windows Phone 8. And I suspect, as a result of this, the new Angry Birds titles will be Windows Phone 8 only, and we'll actually see them in pretty short order. Now, my guess is as good as yours as to whether you get the November the 8th for Angry Birds Star Wars, but I wouldn't be that surprised because it would be a really, you know, good high quality game to have out of the gate for the, you know, obviously the new platform. It's all going to be happening around that time, so I'm sure Microsoft would have done their level best along with their hardware partners, and Nokia has always been an important partner for Rovio to make sure that happens. So we'll have to wait and see. I think it'll probably be bad news for Windows Phone 7 users. I would be surprised if they get any of the new Rovio titles, but I suspect all of these three titles that we mentioned at the beginning to be available on Windows Phone 8 in relatively short order.
Now, what I find interesting here is Rovio's strategy for monetizing these applications. You know, we've always talked before, it's like you either buy at the point of download or you've got ongoing purchases in game or there's advertising. But a lovely piece I saw early this week, Rafe and David, Rovio make about 40% of their bottom line, if the numbers remember correctly, on merchandising around Angry Birds. So they just want to get the game into as many people's phones as possible, because then they'll buy the Princess Leia Piggy plushie, which is coming out a week before Angry Birds Star Wars is released on the smartphone. Whole range of the Star Wars themed Angry Birds stuff is coming up. I just find that really, really interesting that, you know, suddenly the mobile phone, the application is the loss leader.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting strategy. I mean, Rovio have been incredibly smart here. And as you say, the fact the merchandise is coming out in advance is really quite telling. Of course, with Star Wars, they've got a big existing fan base that, you know, going to almost be like a double effect, if you will. But Rovio have long said, you know, they want to go far beyond mobile games, and they're already doing that. I mean, if you go to Finland, you will see Angry Birds branded stuff literally everywhere. I mean, as far as I know, there's one of the soft canned drinks over there is, you know, one of the best selling in the market, and it's Angry Birds branded. It's also very big in China. They're just starting to do things like theme parks, or, you know, kind of big adventure playgrounds that are Angry Birds themed. And, you know, talking to Peter Vestberg, who is the CMO, or also known as the Mighty Eagle. You know,
oh, that Finnish humour.
That's right. It's very clear that Rovio see themselves as becoming, you know, the next Disney, or even bigger than Disney, as they would probably describe it. But the ambition there is to create a whole ecosystem, or a whole, you know, collective business around this Angry Birds brand. And I think they'll look to extend it outside of Angry Birds as well. And yes, it's one of the reasons they've been so successful. You know, they've been able to create an identifiable brand, but then build very strongly on it, but keep quite close control. So, you know, it's high quality. You know, they're also doing things like cookery books. And just this week on the iPad, they've released a Bad Piggy's Egg Cookbook. And I'm sure we'll see more of that. And if it's successful, we'll get it on other platforms as well. And of course, you know, for Microsoft and its hardware partners, they want to kind of co-opt some of that success, because Angry Birds is seen as one of the games you absolutely have to have on your smartphone. And I think that's, you know, two reasons. Obviously, it's a big name, but actually it's enjoyed success outside kind of, you know, the technology adopters. Everyone knows about Angry Birds. It's, you know, a game that has a lot of popularity that goes just beyond the typical smartphone geek. It's cross-generational, and it seems to be cross-cultural as well. You know, it's very big in China, for example. So it'll be very interesting to watch this one, and I think fascinating as a business case study.
Yeah, and just to think that this is not actually unprecedented. Look in the music industry, where digital media has become more and more prevalent and has taken over physical media. Many bands have let the digital content be the loss leader, and they've made up the money with merchandise and gig tickets. So Rovio are basically applying that model in my eyes. Although they've got the extra impetus that bands don't have, in terms of the walking around the supermarket, a little person tugging at your coat saying, "Daddy, Daddy, please, I want the Angry Birds toys." And which there, is hard to speak, say no to.
There speaks someone who does not have a teenage daughter and One Direction in their life, David.
Well, every child goes through different phases.
You've yet to discover Harry. And when you do, Rafe and I are never going to hear the end of it. Anyway, interesting case studies. We'll see how that goes. I'm sure we'll talk about the applications as they hit Windows Phone when and if, or if they don't, as they come through. David, you've also been looking at another interesting application bounced over from Symbian World, Podcatcher. We have a Windows Phone. The eternal quest for good podcasting on Windows Phone, is it at an end?
It will never be an end. And just to clarify, this isn't the Podcatcher as we know from Technolog on Symbian. This is actually Podcatcher written by someone else for the Nokia N9, which was running Mego, which was basically the body of the Lumia 800 before the partnership was signed. Yes, but anyway, if you don't like being dependent on Zoom, yes, there are already independent third-party podcast options, but now we have another one. And this application is very simple. It's there's no actual settings. It's just each feed that you subscribe to has got a subscribe or unsubscribe and auto-download or not option, and that is it. There's no live tiles, but it will automatically download new episodes, and it does automatically check for updates in the feeds, but there's no way to actually control when it does that. So I'm in the early days of testing it, so it's a bit of a mystery of how and when it does things. But it's an open source application, but it does cost £1.29 in the marketplace. But if you don't like being tied to Zoom and having to add new podcasts at least through your desktop, this is a good option to look at.
Yeah, we should probably say with all these third-party podcasting applications, they all have the same limitation of downloading in the background. You have to actually have the application sort of at the forefront, and that's because of limitations in the platform APIs. Now, with Windows Phone 8, some of that will potentially go away. At least theoretically, it should be possible to create something that does this in the background. We haven't entirely seen the practicalities of it, and I haven't actually looked at the API libraries in enough detail to see whether it will really work. And of course, Microsoft may well be updating the podcast functionality in the music and videos application. Anyway, we'll keep a close eye on that one, because we know a lot of people, because they listen to a podcast, are quite interested in that kind of topic. So watch this space. But in the meantime, it's good to see another third-party option arrive on Windows Phone.
Okay, other third parties coming to Windows Phone, Alcatel, who have been sort of there and thereabouts. So we talked about hardware manufacturers. Rafe, we've got more than a leak, should we say, from Alcatel. Would that be fair?
Yes, I think that would be a fair way to put it. I mean, we had some pictures go up on Instagram via a Twitter account, and this was from Alcatel Mobile Phone's kind of Russian PR account, or Russian account, if you will. And this was about a new Windows Phone 7 device. Actually, specifically, they said it was going to release with Windows Phone 7.8 on board. The pictures actually that were posted were Windows Phone 7.5, but we assume it's planned to come out later in the year, and by that time, 7.8 will presumably be out and about. And so rather than launching with the old version, we'll have the new version, which of course really the big difference there is the start screen. There are a number of other small differences, but Alcatel Lucent, it's kind of quite interesting. I shouldn't call it Alcatel Lucent, because that's actually the French telecommunications giant, whereas this is actually a Chinese company, TCL, I believe it is, but it does share the brand with that French telecommunications giant. And the reason for that is they did a joint venture back, I think, in about 2006 or so, but almost immediately the Chinese company, I think a year later, kind of bought out Alcatel Lucent. And so although it's still using that brand name in some markets, Russia is one of them, it's actually almost, well, it is entirely Chinese owned, and these devices are manufactured in China. So it's another one of these OEMs that have decided to start supporting Windows Phone, because of course this is their kind of first Windows Phone device. Previously it's all been Android-powered smartphones. It's kind of interesting to see another Chinese manufacturer sign up to support Windows Phone. It just seems to be getting that bit of momentum that it didn't get in the kind of first two goes round with 7 and then 7.5. And it does kind of remind me of what happened quite early on in Android's product lifecycle. And there's all sorts of politics, of course, involved in what platform to use. But just catching attention. And of course, this is going to be a low-cost device. That's kind of a given, given that it's 7.8, but the specs are reasonable. It's going to be a 5-megapixel camera, then it's kind of got 512 megabytes of RAM, which I'm glad to see it's not one of the 256 megabyte devices. It's got a gigahertz single core processor, 1500 milliamp hour battery, only 4 gigs of internal storage, which I suspect might cause a few comments. But again, it's being built to a price. It's going to be around about 160 quid. I mean, it's the source here was 7,990 Russian rubles. So it's 160 quid, $250, 200 euros. I'm sure that will drop quite quickly. So it will be joining those kind of low-cost devices. And actually, this is where Windows Phone has been enjoying quite a bit of success recently, mainly led, it has to be said, by the Nokia Lumia 610, which is the best-selling Windows Phone handset in quite a few markets, including Russia and China, where we know this handset is going to launch. In Russia, it will be under this Alcatel Mobile Phone brand, or Alcatel One Touch View, I think will be the full name of it. Over in China, it's going to be a TCL handset. But this will be worth watching. It's more of interest, I think, just because it kind of gives an indication of there's a bit of strength in this lower cost Windows Phone handset, which kind of gets ignored by everyone else. Not surprisingly, when there's flash handsets like the HTC 8X or the Lumia series out there, but could contribute quite a bit of sales and just sort of getting a bit of momentum behind Windows Phone, which obviously is something that Microsoft needs. And we've said several times that the mid-tier and the low-tier market is probably more important in overall device sale terms than the high end. And actually, that was reflected in an editorial you recently wrote, Ewan, where you actually argued that 2013 was the year of Windows Phone 7.8. And you were, I suspect, trying to raise a few hackles, but I think the point is well made. It is going to be very important next year.
Of course it is. Look, like, if you can build a phone for a network and it costs $110, or you can build almost the same phone with almost the same bullet points and the bill of materials is $75 because you're going for Windows 7.8 and slightly back processor and specs and storage and stuff compared to Windows Phone 8, then, you know, when you get into the points where £5 makes all the difference to the cost of the handset in the store to how well it sells or not, of course you're going to want 7.8. And this is why, when people go, oh, 7.8's not doing anything except backporting the UI, how boring is that? It's actually very, very important. I think that when we see 7.8, it's going to look identical on the screen to Windows Phone 8, because it has to look identical so people can write once and it will run on 8, on 7.8 and 8. Obviously, as we've discussed with Angry Birds, high-level functionality going into low-level coding, there may not be that. But the sort of bread-and-butter stuff for things like Wallet, things you know, like, you know, the Link client that Microsoft have, they will work, I'm pretty sure, quite happily on both. So you have the high cost and the low cost. It's exactly what Symbian were hoping to do with Symbian. Drive it down at the low end, make it dirt cheap to build. That's why you could have a good one with a 600 megahertz processor and 256 meg RAM, and you would have a competent upgun feature phone, basic smartphone. You know, that's why Nokia 610 was so, oh yeah, look, they've changed operating systems. It's been a bit of a hiccup for a year or two, but they're still doing the same strategy. Right.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, a lot of people have criticized the 610 because it's, you know, creating market fragmentation. But I think that's inevitable when you have high-end and low-end devices. And it's about the way you handle it. I wouldn't necessarily be quite so optimistic as you around apps. I think the really interesting thing to watch is, you know, how many apps are going to get released that are both 7.5 and 8 compatible. It's perfectly possible to do so. You kind of use Silverlight, or you build for 7.5 and it will also run on 8. Now, there are some 8 features that obviously aren't being backported. If you're doing anything with native code or using one of the new gaming engines, no, that's not going to work. But there's already a pretty healthy catalogue of apps. And I do expect that to get added to. I don't expect suddenly all, you know, 7.5 development just to cease. I suspect it may be a bit of an issue as we get further on into 2013, but we're going to have to kind of wait and see on that one. Let's not pretend that, you know, this isn't an issue that you get elsewhere. And you're talking about Android devices. You know, you are seeing the old Android devices being released from, you know, the low cost devices. And then things that are running, obviously, Android 4 and above are going to be in, you know, 2013. And a lot of those apps will be written for 4 and above. So you'll get this, you know, a similar situation. As I say, I think it will be one to keep a close eye on. I mean, my guess would be a lot of games won't be backwardly compatible. There will continue to be a few that have been in development in the last 6 months. But a lot of the, especially the higher powered games, are going to take advantage of the new stuff on Windows Phone 8. On the app side, I think it will be a mixture. I mean, I think the savvy developers will, you know, create a version for 7 and then they add in extra 8 features and, you know, have a different version. But I actually suspect a significant proportion of apps just to be written against, you know, Silverlight for 7.5 and the release for Windows Phone 8 as well. Because an awful lot of the stuff, you know, is fairly standard. You can do it. It's when you get into the more complex apps, or the ones maybe that integrate deeper into the platform. You know, you mentioned Wallet there. Actually, that's going to be an area that is going to be 8 only, for example, you know, because they've got the new Wallet Hub coming along. So we'll have to wait and see. But I don't think it negates the point of these kind of older devices, should we call them the Windows 7.8 devices, they're still going to, you know, sell in very significant numbers in 2013, and that's going to be good for the ecosystem health as a whole. I think most people listening to this podcast understandably are far more interested in the Windows Phone 8 device, and they're going to kind of be the headline. That's where all the attention will be. But you know, they will have a halo effect for devices that sit lower down, you know, just the same as happens in the Android world. But, you know, just as with Symbian and with Android, the lower cost devices are what are going to drive sales more than anything else.
It's a really interesting one. And what strikes me is the fragmentation. It's the Windows Phone 8 that's causing the fragmentation, not Windows Phone 7.8.
Well, I mean, whenever you have a new version, fragmentation is somewhat inevitable. If you add in a new feature that you either can't backport, or even if you can backport it, you know, some of your base is not going to have access to that, because not everyone will upgrade their 7.5 to 7.8. So, you know, it's a tricky one.
I think it's interesting as well that for a long time, lots and lots of people, industry and press alike, were sticking the boot in with Android, saying, fragmentation. And I was guilty of that too. However, it's funny that as Windows Phone has split into Windows 8, Windows 7.8, and then Windows Phone for lower-end devices like the 610, and the iPhone has got Retina displays and non-Retina displays, and now the iPhone 5 with an extra row of icons, and that there's going to have to be so many different versions of application assets developed for, but the complaints about Android fragmentation seem to have magically stopped.
But I think that's probably a little generous. I mean, I think you're right. Fragmentation is inevitable as a platform develops, because you're basically starting to deal with legacy issues. And that's just as true on Android, iPhone, Windows Phone. And actually the pioneer here really was Symbian. Anyone who followed the Symbian world for a long time realized that happened both within S63rd edition versions and then going to S65th edition and subsequently. I think the important thing is how you manage that fragmentation. And you need to make it clear to developers what the situation is and have the tools available. And there's a couple of things you should do on the consumer side, guarantee software updates. It's interesting that Microsoft did that with Windows Phone 8. Now they're saying you will get 2 years worth of updates. It kind of illuminates some of the fuss around 7 to 8. And actually there's kind of that 2 year timescale already there. Doesn't mean I don't feel sorry for people who bought a Windows Phone 7.5 device over the summer and were expecting to get 8. Obviously, the information is now out there. I think on the Android side of things, the fragmentation has been worse because it developed so quickly and because Google released many more versions of the Android operating system, and then they had that confusion with the split between smartphones and tablets, and that's obviously coming back together. They did the same kind of consumer promise on Android updates, and that's really fallen by the wayside. Motorola getting a lot of flack for that in the last week, and given that they're owned by Google, it's a difficult situation. So as I say, fragmentation might be inevitable. How you manage it is not. You can handle it well or you can handle it poorly. I think Microsoft has done a pretty good job so far, but it will be very interesting to see how that continues. And that's really the app question I was talking about earlier. That's what comes next. And by the same token, you get this on the iPhone world as well, with the iPhone 5, that extra row of icons. Now people have discovered that kind of extra screen resolution in the SDK a long time ago, but there are a lot of apps sitting in the marketplace now that kind of have black borders at the top and bottom to kind of get around this issue. And you wonder whether Apple could maybe have been a little less secretive and sort of let their developers know in advance, and more than would have been ready. But obviously there's arguments for doing that both ways, and Microsoft is just as guilty of this. You look at the sort of fuss around the Windows Phone 8 SDK, which hasn't been widely available for developers. Basically, it's all been under NDAs and only limited access. And even now, when we're just a couple of weeks away from the consumer launch, it looks like the SDK will happen just a week or so before they become available in the shop. I'm not sure that was the right call. Difficult to say. I think in the end, you have to judge the results afterwards. But that does look like one which was maybe a questionable decision. Let's wait and see.
Yeah, I think that there is, of course, the sort of rule of thumb you have is developers lead marketing, not marketing lead developers. And you do get the sense with the SDK being held back, Windows Phone 8 itself being held back, while the 8X and the 8Ss and Lumia 910s of this world were shown off. It feels more marketing-led than developer and hardware-led. But again, it gives us something to write about, right?
It does indeed. Because
there's that period between Christmas and New Year when nothing's going to happen. Guess what our editorials are going to be on, folks?
Yeah, and of course...
much of the point, we haven't had anything to write about apart from, suspicious leaks.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice bleed in at the next bit there, David. Congratulations.
It probably is worth saying with all of this, of course, that actually it probably doesn't have that much effect on whether things will be successful or not, because in terms of something like apps, the developers who kind of will be seen as the high profile ones would have been given access, you know, to the SDK and have had it for quite some time. And that's probably the one that will, you know, have the perception battle. There's, you know, it's very easy to talk about these things as if they really, really matter. Of course, they have an impact, but I don't think they'll change the broad story. And, you know, for that, it's going to be around how well is the Windows Phone 8 adopted. And that's really going to be, you know, marketing, I think, more than anything else, and the deals with the operators. They'll be very important. We're getting more and more information about that. You know, kind of one of the prerequisites was to have good devices. And I think, you know, with the Samsung Ative and with the HTC and the Nokia devices, you know, that definitely has happened. And actually, we've had kind of more on that this week, haven't we, Ewan?
We have, yes. Apart from the fact that Samsung's Android device is launching the Galaxy Mini. When a 4-inch screen became mini, I'm not quite sure. well, look, it's the new HTC Titan Mini with a 5.9-inch screen. Doesn't quite work. But yeah, we have had a number of devices pop up. Again, it's that sort of, it's a leak, but it's a very well-timed leak that allows PR publicity to sort of build up momentum in a nice scale up to the end of October. Now, whatever conclusions you may draw from that, I've drawn them as well. But let's start with T-Mobile in the USA, the Nokia Lumia 810. Some subtle changes on this one. But it is, you know, T-Mobile made a big splash and a big effort with the 710, sort of mid-range device. And Rafe, they're doing the same here with the 810. But again, some subtle differences to make it T-Mobile's 810.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this is actually a legitimate device now. This isn't a leak. I guess we'll get on to the less legitimate one in just a moment. But effectively, this is a variant of the Lumia 820. But for T-Mobile, you know, they've changed the cellular radios in the US. T-Mobile have some pretty funky WCDMA bands. It's particularly the 1700 megahertz or the AWS band that I'm thinking of here. And so it's not an LTE device, but it does run on T-Mobile's 4G network. And I say 4G with kind of inverted commas. It's actually HSDPA+. But all fairness to them, it is a pretty fast network and you can get pretty decent speeds on it. Other than that, you know, you've still got the 4.3-inch OLED clear back display and the 8-megapixel camera with the Carl Zeiss optics. It's actually slightly different cosmetically. I would say the sides are slightly more angular rather than the rounded edges. You've got some differences in the speaker grille at the bottom and then some positioning of the camera on the back. It's sort of it's vertically rather than horizontally aligned, the camera housing. In terms of actual size, it is slightly different. It's ever so slightly thicker. It's slightly longer, but it's not quite as wide as the Lumia 820. And the weight actually drops down from 160 grams to 145 grams. I think some of the more interesting bits and pieces are actually the front-facing camera is Skype HD certified. It's 1.2 megapixel. That compares to VGA on the original, and it's a wide-angled lens, a bit like what we've seen on the 8X. And so presumably T-Mobile kind of up the requirements for that, saying people want to be doing Skype calling or video calling with it. The battery is the other one that caught my attention. It's actually 1800 milliamp-hours as opposed to 1650 milliamp-hours. So you get some extra torque time, some extra runtime out of that, which I think is great. And wireless charging is actually going to be included out of the box. So there's, you know, it's not major differences, but there's just enough to set it apart to make it a little bit different. And that will have come, you know, probably from T-Mobile saying, yes, we want that. No, we want that. And it just, you know, the requirements slightly different. I suspect this will also be slightly less expensive because it doesn't have the LTE radios and the kind of associated licensing costs built into it. But T-Mobile haven't announced any official pricing on this, and we probably won't get SIM-free pricing because it's a kind of unique to the network. And they said it'll be available in the coming weeks, which I think we can translate to, again, you know, the first couple of weeks of November. But, you know, it's good to see, you know, getting on to another American network. And, you know, I think this whole exclusive strategy is an interesting one. Maybe we could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an unusual one, the whole exclusive, because, you know, again, we've written this up on the website. I can see why there are circumstances that a company would go for an exclusive deal. It allows them to have, you know, maybe guaranteed purchases. You know, you can have this phone exclusively if you promise to buy 4 million of them off us, that sort of thing. You know, and by virtue of that, the networks are going to try and sell it, so the subsidy cost will have the cost to the consumer far lower. But it's a tricky one because, you know, you read online, and again, we have to remember voices online are loud, but not necessarily, you know, the voice of everybody, that the Lumia 910 on Verizon would have been what everybody was wishing for, because they don't want to go to AT&T. Because AT&T have announced that they have it exclusively, then it's not going to be on Verizon. Now, you know, I could drive holes through that argument quite easily. We don't know how long the exclusivity period is. An interesting one here is AT&T changed their send a phone back within 30 days at no cost down to 14 days. You know, so they might even only have an exclusivity period of 30 days. You know, AT&T alluded to that. Yeah, we want it exclusively, but we don't want it for very long because of what happened with the 900. We don't want to be burned as much as this, or Nokia want to keep it open so they can get it onto Verizon as quickly as possible. But what it's done here is it's shown that HTC appeared to feel to be the lead phone in America, because they are going to be available over all the networks. Because, you know, Microsoft, given the choice of a flagship on one network, a flagship on all of them, have went for the flagship on all of them, have put their weight behind the 8X. It's, you know, Apple tried it and did very well. But Apple have now subsequently said that if they had the time again, they wouldn't have put the iPhone exclusively out on AT&T. They would have went for whole network coverage. So they kind of, and then Nokia came and go, oh no, this is the way forward. This is how we're going to do it. And this is how we're going to do it in every territory for a flagship phone. And the 810 can just pick up everywhere else. It, you know, when carrier relations are so important, exclusivity damages another carrier relation to the benefit of one. And, you know, shotgun or sniper. You know, to be perfectly honest, you know, I prefer my Evil Dead's.
Yeah.
Shotgun.
And we should also mention that there's a leak of the Lumia 822, which would be Verizon. And again, it would be a variant of the Lumia 820. And that's on America's kind of first network or second network, depending on how you count the numbers. T-Mobile and Sprint are a bit smaller. But as you say, HTC is on at least three of the big US networks, AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, whereas, you know, Nokia doing this exclusivity strategy. Now, part of this is probably about the fact that HTC has better existing relationships with the network operators. I mean, Nokia is essentially starting from scratch, almost gave up in the US smartphone market a couple of years ago, has had a few small deals with T-Mobile, and then subsequently had the Lumia 900 with AT&T, and the 710 obviously on T-Mobile as well. But it is, you know, a much lower base, and so it doesn't have that reputation for delivering great handsets. And, you know, of course, the networks are familiar with who Nokia is, but it's about selling to their consumers and what they think they can sell. So when it comes to something like an exclusive arrangement, it does kind of reflect the, you know, the extra power that the operators have. And, you know, if you've got a handset that they know is going to sell, everyone wants to carry it, and they won't care about exclusivity, because it's, you know, like the iPhone, they know they have to carry that. Of course, you can, to an extent, turn this the other way around. You know, from the Nokia perspective, is, you know, what is going to sell us more phones? And they would have done the sums and decided that they can make more money, sell more phones by being exclusive. Now, the reason for this is when you set up an exclusive arrangement like this, the operator will be obliged to spend more on marketing, you know, because they recognize that, you know, by limiting the number of customers that the manufacturer can sell to, that has an impact. So they'll say, right, well, we're going to, you know, get back some of those sales that you'd lose by doing extra marketing. But probably more significantly, on the device subsidy front, they'll actually agree to pay a bigger chunk of the device subsidy. So it's going to be very interesting to watch what the device subsidy is on all of these devices. Typically in the US, you know, the top-end smartphones start on $199, and they will come down over time. And then you get the mid-tier ones maybe on $149 or $99, and then the kind of the low-end ones are free. The Lumia 900 was available $99. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see the 920 kind of meet that, or perhaps even go a little bit lower, $49 or even free. I think that will probably take a bit longer. And of course, that will then have a fairly dramatic impact on sales. You know, we talk many times about real cost of handsets, but the reality is that upfront cost is, you know, seen as the perceived cost of the handset in the States. And in all fairness, often it is, because, you know, everyone's going to have a certain contract anyway, because it's kind of a mandated minimum. So there are reasons to go exclusive, and actually it can be a good business model. It was interesting to hear Stephen Elop talking in Knocker's Q2 results about how they saw the Lumia 900 AT&T deal had been successful and contrasted it with the kind of the broad brush approach in Europe where it was put on lots of operators, and as a result Nokia would be doing more exclusive arrangements. We've seen some of that already. We're seeing exclusives in Canada, for example, with Rogers on the 920, and it looks like we'll get it in the UK with Everything Everywhere getting the 920 exclusive. A lot's going to depend on how much time those exclusive are, as Ewan says. So it'd be difficult to assess them fully. Now, there are some suggestions that we might see variants of the 920, again, to kind of get around this exclusivity period. I would suspect that we may not see them immediately. You know, they might come out in the new year, for example, because I think AT&T in the US at least are going to be given a free run with the 920. We'll have to wait and see. There's kind of more rumours and leaks coming out all the time on that particular one. But you know, people tend to look at exclusives as being annoying as a way of not getting the hands that they want on their network, and I completely understand that. But it is also worth remembering there is a good business case for actually doing it, and it's, you know, both, it's basically about the number of handsets you can sell and the position of that manufacturer in the marketplace they're trying to get into.
Yeah, and I think, yes, appreciate and understand the points you're making there. Sometimes I think as a consumer, it does feel as if the business interests of the businesses who survive on the consumers isn't always in the consumer's best interest. And I think, especially if I was in America on another carrier and I was like thinking, like, well, I've only got budget for the 820, but if I was on the other network, I'd get a bit more battery power. And I know there's... I know that's a minority thing, but there are people who will rant about that, and that's just one example. And it almost seems counterintuitive, because it's like, if you do it exclusively, you are cutting off certain amounts of customers who would like to give you their money.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it is a little bit counterintuitive, but the thing is, as we all know, you know, the sales of a product are not really dependent on how good it is always. It's actually about the marketing and the subsidy you get with them. And so in this case, Nokia is betting that AT&T will sell more 920s than if it was available everywhere, assuming they could do that, of course, because they will have extra marketing and a bigger subsidy. So, you know, it's kind of two curves, if you like, with the sales numbers, and, you know, they've done their numbers and will be betting that they'll actually get more out of the exclusive arrangement. And yeah, you're kind of right. You know, it isn't always in the consumer's best interest, but companies are actually about the bottom line and making money. And a lot of the time, obviously, that will run in parallel, because keeping your consumers happy is, you know, generally a good business strategy. But you have to remember it's actually about the entire consumer base, and the ones getting annoyed probably represent a relatively small proportion of the overall customer base. Say, you know, 10% that are aware of all these kind of arrangements. Most people will just walk into a shop and will see the range of phones and will choose from that. They won't, you know, be thinking about specific handsets. That's obviously very different for a group, and, you know, arguably they have quite a loud voice, especially online, and it can have a knock-on effect, especially if they're recommending things to their friends. But these, you know, these calculations aren't simple, and you kind of have to step back a bit from your own standpoint and think about, you know, if I'm running a business, what's the best way to do it? And of course, you know, none of this is guaranteed, and so they're having to make projections about what sales are going to be and what they think will happen. And you obviously have to calculate what your competition is going to be doing, because at the same time with all of this, you know, you've got other companies also introducing phones. A good example of this is kind of what happened with the Titan 2 in the States. It was basically buried by the Lumia 900 launch, and, you know, it was a fine device, but the Lumia 900 clearly won that round. This time round, you know, HTC have been maybe a little more canny, and they're making it available on all the networks. Be interesting to see how it turns out, and that's something we'll come back and talk to when we actually have some sales numbers. It'll probably be early in 2013.
Well, there's another thing with exclusives, and feel free to tell me I'm wearing a tinfoil hat, but do you think it's actually more to do with the companies are trying to control or herd the consumers by having an exclusive? You have to come on our network to get that. For me, that doesn't work. For example, I played Halo on the PC. Absolutely loved it. Sequels came out. They were only on the Xbox. Well, I thought, well, screw you, Microsoft. I'm not buying an Xbox, so I'm just not going to play the game. So there you go. I would have bought the game if you put it on my platform.
No, you're quite right to be wearing a tinfoil hat. It absolutely is a conspiracy to try and get you onto one particular network. I mean, you only need to see what happened with, you know, the iPhone of AT&T subscriber numbers went shooting through the roof, because some people, as you say, are willing to switch. But there are the, you know, the tinfoil brigade, if you like, who aren't going to switch. And actually, it's not the tinfoil brigade. There's lots of people who will decide that the switching cost, or which is really the inconvenience involved in switching, is not worthwhile to get the handset. And obviously, that really depends on how attractive the handset is. Now, if it's something you really, really want, you will go through pretty much any convenience you have to in order to get it. But yes, obviously, that's the reason exclusives exist, essentially, from the operator point of view, because they want to get people from other networks. And partly it's also they want to prevent other people that they already have going to another network. That's, you know, the churn. But, you know, the cost of a customer acquisition in the developed markets, you know, for a new customer going onto an operator is very, very high indeed. You know, it can be anything up to £300 or £400 or, you know, $600-$700. And so exclusives are kind of a good way of getting people to switch, because obviously it's offering you something that you can't get anywhere else, you know, especially when the, you know, pricing of contract is very similar. In most urban areas, the coverage is going to be very similar as well. You know, they have to look for things that make them stand out from their competition, you know, differentiating, just as the handset manufacturers have to do. And for operators, it's, I would argue, it's harder to do than it is for the device manufacturers, which is why, you know, exclusive deals, or, you know, even having a different colour can sometimes be, you know, quite an important factor for them.
And let's face it, David, you know, there is not enough tinfoil to go around as many people as there are of, oh, I just want to spend $100 on a phone. You know, we have an option. We go, we buy them SIM-free, and then we buy the SIM and the contract separately. You look at somewhere like Finland, interesting choice of country to look at there, but, you know, the whole buy the handset and buy the network time is completely disassociated. You know, this is a territorial thing. And yes, of course, there is an element of you must join us. That's why you have, you know, everything's tying into your Windows Live account. That's why everything ties into iCloud on Mac. That's why, you know, your Android devices all need to have that Google tie-in and the Google account to get in there. You know, the thing we have to remember is, you know, there are people who are looking for, you know, the best of the best. The people who want to go out there and listen to that Rachmaninoff played in Prague Concert Hall, conducted by John Williams, with, I don't know, Keith Harris and Orville on the triangle, because that is what makes music music. For everybody else, they'll walk into a store and go, what's the biggest thing nowadays? Ooh, it's One Direction, because there are posters everywhere. I shall buy the new One Direction CD. There we go. Dink. You know, both of them are completely valid musical viewpoints to the person who is doing it. You know, Harry or Rachmaninoff? Harry or Rachmaninoff? You know, the majority of people will go in one direction, and we just have to go in another one. Hey! You knew that was coming. The point here is that marketing plays an important, buying plays an important, but human emotion does it as well. Most people just want a phone that works. They'll go in, they'll ask for a phone that works, they'll be given a phone that works. What happens behind the scenes to make sure that they get the phone that company A wants them to get, that's business. And business, like making mobile phones, is hard and evil and nasty and manipulative, and just, sorry, that's Simon Cowell in One Direction again, isn't it? Now strike all that.
I'm seriously worried that Ewan's actually a closet One Direction fan.
There's only two mentions
we're getting.
Two mentions. You know, you want me to go back to Airplane and dissing Hull? I will.
I think that's three mentions now.
Three mentions.
Okay, it's four.
No, that was Monty Python now.
Okay. Well,
I'm sorry, everybody.
While we move on from and draw a curtain on Ewan's musical love for One Direction, perhaps we should get on to our last topic of the podcast.
Okay. That would be, what app have you been using this week? I've been using the Where's Harry from One Direction Now application. because there isn't one of them, it would be stalking and we would be arrested. I've been using Colorflow, which is a lovely little puzzle game where you get a big box full of different colored pixels, and you have to choose a color. So you start off at the top corner and see it's a purple one, and it's got a red book color next to it and an orange color next to it. So if you press red, it will do red for both of the colors, and then you can choose another color, and, you know, basically you will slowly build up this big block of color by changing it all the time, and the end of the game is to get the entire box all one color. So you can only change color to the one that's next to the big island of color. It's kind of hard to explain, but it was really easy. Once you pick it up, start playing it for 2-3 goes, you'll get it straight away. It's simple, it's random, so there's as many levels as there are heat deaths in the universe. And it's just addictive and free and colorful. Really enjoying that one. That's my recommendation. Who wants to go next? Rafe, you go next.
Yes, I'm going to talk about an app called VLC Remote. As you might guess, this is for remotely controlling your VLC media player on your Mac or PC. Now, there's quite a few of these already in the marketplace, and indeed some of them share the name. So the one I'm talking about is from Hobbyist Software Limited. It kind of caught my eye because I thought it was one of the better implementations I've seen of this. For those that don't know, VLC Media Player is, you know, kind of an open source media player for playing back all sorts of media files. I think most people probably end up using it for videos and DVDs. And of course, when you're watching those on the computer, often you'll be kind of, you know, stepping back and, you know, away from your computer, especially if you've kind of got it in a living room situation or some kind of media entertainment PC. And so being able to control it from your phone is pretty handy because, you know, not everyone will have a remote control that works with their computer for that kind of thing. And it saves you getting up off the sofa and having to, you know, go and fiddle with your computer. It's got the kind of the full DVD controls plus all the kind of standard stuff for just doing quick, you know, stop, play and pause. But you can also, you know, do things like controlling the volume. You can control subtitles, aspect ratio, you know, audio track, all of that kind of thing. And, you know, it's been slickly implemented. You know, someone's gone to the trouble of making sure it's, you know, a nice Metro app. But the thing that really caught my eye more than anything else was the setup procedure. Now, this can be quite difficult for setting up VLC to be operated via remote, and this is all done over Wi-Fi, as anyone who will have tried this will acknowledge. But there's actually kind of a helper application that you can get with this VLC remote, which will do all the hard work for you. And essentially, you just run the app on the PC, you do the pairing process, and then you're ready to go. So, yeah, highly recommended from that point of view. And all the instructions are kind of built into the app to tell you what to do. So it's much easier to get up and running with this than typically is the case with these VLC remote applications. Maybe a bit of a niche interest on this, but you know, caught my eye as something that had been well implemented and, you know, it was polished.
David, do you want to finish up?
Indeed I do. And just to follow up on Riff's comment, if you're ever using any sort of application like that and you just, for it's just whatever diagnosis you do, it just will not work. Just reboot your router. That usually does the trick. My pick is a game which has been around for a while, and it's something of a seminal title in Windows Phone world, is Armed, because we've finally done a review of it. I've been playing it a little bit, and also I've been playing it on my laptop because it's available in the Windows 8 store too. And I looked back through our archives, and I was amazed to see we hadn't reviewed it. So I thought, right, I'm getting in there. It's a strategy game, but it's not a real-time strategy game. The basic idea is that you are fighting for control of a map, and there are control points that you need to control and defend, and each control point gives you more resource points with which you can build and upgrade more buildings and machines of war and death. The game is very much in like a mecha theme, so if you like big robots smashing things, this is a game for you, as it is me. You can, as there are various robots you can make. There's like a big dreadnought class, which is like a bipedal robot, which literally does walk along and smash things with its fist. There's mobile artillery units that are like robotic spiders. And there's little scout units. And it's a really good battlefield game. There's even like a fog of war. I mean, you can't see what the enemy's doing if they're out of visual range. So you need to send scouts who need to hide behind trees and stuff. And if they get found out and killed, you can't see what's going on. You'd normally play against the AI in the game, so you can just sit there playing. But it does have a multiplayer mode, which is the pairing system on that is the name escapes me, but it's a third party multiplayer pairing system. But this is where the multiplayer aspect is why it isn't real time strategy, because the idea is that you plan out your moves and program them into the game, and then set them off into motion. And then once those moves are complete, the armed servers send that move to your opponent and let them know. And it even updates via a live tile to say you've got one or two games to respond to. So it's kind of more like playing chess in that respect. But I think it really works, because I think especially with mobile games, when you're just going to be having a quick go during like small pockets of time, you can't have an intense like 2 hour long gaming session there on the phone. So it's better just to do it in installments. And I really do love this game. I have no complaints about it. The graphics are amazing. The sound and music are brilliant. And the gameplay is really good as well. And the control method is perfect for a touchscreen device. So that's Armed. You can play it for free with advertisements, or it's £2.29 in the marketplace.
And there we go. And the check is in the post, David. It's from the developers. Right. All of those applications you will find linked back on our website, allaboutwindowsphone.com. If you're listening to this in the AAWP Windows Phone application, the links are actually in the application. They'll take you straight to the marketplace. You can install those applications. Everything we've been talking about is all up for discussion as well. Your comments are all very much appreciated back on the site. We'll continue to do the news, the flows, and the reviews and everything as we go through October and beyond. Allaboutwindowsphone.com. All remains for me to say thank you to David.
Thank you, Ewan, and thank you to everyone listening at home or at work or wherever you are.
Yeah, at home or work or wherever you are. What does that leave? The X Factor Boot Camp. Thank you also to Rafe.
Thanks, everybody.
Oh, no, they won't be doing the boot camp this year. Sorry, because Samsung's sponsoring them this year, not Nokia. Scratch that. You're going to be at Strictly Ballroom. Thank you from Rafe. Thank you from me, Ewan Spencer. Thank you to everybody out there and the Windows Phone land. And all we have to do now is keep Windows phoning. Keep Windows, keep dancing. It doesn't work, Rafe.
No, it doesn't. I'm afraid not. You have to go back to the drawing board with that one, Ewan. I do apologise to all our listeners. We'll have Ewan back on top form next week.
No more Brucey bonus for me. Well, if you play your cards right, we'll catch you next week.
And if you don't understand any of that, don't worry. It's all UK cultural references, which, yes, I think our international audience might struggle with. Otherwise, we'll try and stick to Windows Phone a little more, because we don't want to lose direction, do we, Ewan?
No, we don't know. I'll do some Family Feud next week. I'll take Things Only I Know for 600, please, Alex.
And there we go. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Catch you next time.